I know what I how I reacted, and I think you heard me react when I played this earlier on the program. This is the boss of the so-called Federal so-called Reserve.
What did we get wrong? And that really was looking at these supply side issues and believing that they would be resolved relatively quickly. And that by that I mean there were going to be vaccinations, everyone would get vaccinated, so the millions of people who dropped out of the labor force would come right back in.
Yeah, he went on to say his model was not wrong because that wasn't in the model. Now, I can respond that way, but you know what I decided we'd do? I'm going to have Zach with me here. Zach's waiting in the green room with his people. They're applying makeup to him, giving him his last, you know, minute massages and such. He's warming up. Ladies and gentlemen, Zach Abraham versus Jerome Powell.
The Todd Herman Show is 100% disapproved by big pharma, technocrats, and tyrants everywhere. Now, from the high mountains of free America, here's the Emerald City Exile, Todd Herman.
Today is the day the Lord has made, and these are the times through which God has decided we shall live. Wise counsel were to seek. I'm doing that today with my friend and brother Zach Abraham. SOTA Weight Loss, S-O-T-A, weightloss.com stands for State of the Art, and partner of the day helping us get this done. Zach, when I talked about Jerome Powell, you versus him, I saw the baseball cap go on backwards. I think you're getting serious.
That's like the Ken Griffey approach. Right. You know what I mean? When we're about to put in work, we're going to chop some wood. You got to flip it around, man.
There it is. Let me just get right off with this. This is the boss of the Federal Reserve. And I don't know, is it? Am I okay pointing out that it's not actually a federal agency, or does that make me a racist or a transphobe or a conspiracy theorist?
Well, I mean, no question it makes you a far-right conspiracy theorist.
Okay, good. That's where I feel comfortable, because it's not part of the federal government.
Well, no, but it also means you believe crazy things like, you know, Bill Clinton was a pervert. This is all part of the far-right conspiracy. Or you probably believe that Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself. Yeah. You know, all that crazy stuff, right? That crazy stuff.
Absolutely insane. The real dangerous belief I have about the Fed is it should be audited by the actual elected officials and the people.
You crazy man.
All right. Listen here now. This is Secretary Powell. He has some people to blame for the circumstance in which he finds his model.
Chair Powell, Mr. Carson was talking about a gray box. What's your gray box? Is there something that you wish you knew that would help in setting monetary policy? Only one thing.
Yeah, no, I'd go back to the same thing, really, which is what did we get wrong? And that really was looking at these supply side issues and believing that they would be resolved relatively quickly. And that by that, I mean there were going to be vaccinations, everyone would get vaccinated. So the millions of people who dropped out of the labor force would come right back in. So wages wouldn't be under such pressure. That didn't happen for a range of reasons. It didn't happen. In addition, the bottlenecks and the shortages haven't been alleviated yet. And then on the back of that comes the new shock in the form of the war. But it wasn't something wrong with our models, because it wasn't in the models at all.
There is nothing wrong with our models because it wasn't in the models at all. I'll just leave that there for you, Zach.
There's a part of me that whenever I hear these press conferences, I giggle, but then I'm also jealous. You know, it'd be like my clients going, hey, 50% of our money's gone. I'm like, well, I mean, hey, it wasn't in the model, man. You know, like, it's not my fault, man.
Yeah.
With all humility, because I do not think that these are stupid people. What I do think is a couple things. First of all, I think that it's very dangerous to have folks running a body like the Federal Reserve that do not have firsthand knowledge of and experience of how financial markets work. And I don't say, Todd, you know me, I'll be the first to admit that I've got a very deep knowledge set in a very thin area, right? I'm a specialist at financial markets and investing, and I'm careful when I wander outside of that. But when you see these people operate, it was kind of like a conversation that I had with a prospect the other day that had heard me last year on our radio show talking about Kathy Wood and her fund ARKK. And he's like, you know, you were telling people to get out of it. How did you know? And I said, you know, I think your listeners know this. I get plenty of wrong, so I'm not sitting here popping my chest out. But he's like, how did you know? And I go, you just know when you see it, and it just takes time in the saddle. And, you know, when you see somebody that's running a portfolio a certain way, you're like, oh yeah, it's only a matter of time till they blow up. Right.
Yeah.
There's one of the biggest issues I think that we have with the Federal Reserve is that there are no practitioners. It's all academic. And like you just said, it's not in our model. Well, I mean, that's the story of every model, right? Every model you follow is going to break at some point. Every correlation breaks down. And people go, Zach, what do you mean? And I always go back to the analogy of go back to 2018. One of the things that we were saying that we thought would signal the end of this cycle was when the dollar and gold rallied together. And I took a ton of flack for that. Okay, now here you are with gold up, since we said that, about 35%, and the dollar at 23-year highs. Again, not me sticking my chest out. Why was that our thought, and why were we right? Just time in the saddle. You just know, you know, you kind of see the way markers, and you look at how things are breaking out. And I think that this is almost a government crisis, because this is an issue that we've got clear across the board, and it's right at the Federal Reserve. We've been completely taken over and enamored by academics, and there are no practitioners left. And the ironic thing, now maybe they've got a card up their sleeve that I don't see, but the ironic thing is this is exactly how every crisis has happened, right? The Fed waits too long to take action. By the time they end up taking action, they end up hiking interest rates and tightening liquidity going into an economic slowdown. And so you get double whammied, and everybody's going to focus. Like these people even asking the questions, it even kicks me off with the reporters. Don't ask them about what they're doing now. Ask them about why they weren't doing it 5 years ago, right? It's this stupid. If we walk up to a barren field and we go, well, where did the plants go? Right? Yesterday, what'd you do yesterday? Yeah. Did you not water these yesterday? And You're looking at them going, yesterday? What were they doing during planting season?
Yeah.
Right? It's just so irritating, because again, for years we've been saying the Fed's going to do this. They're going to roll too long. They're going to wait too long. And by the time they've got a hike, we're going to have our backs to the wall, and it's going to be a mess. Here we are again. How did guys like me know that 5 years ago? How are we saying this all along? You better hike now while the sun is shining. And even if it's not optimal for stock markets, right? Quit caring about the stock market so much, care about the economy. But you know, that's not who they serve, right? They're not the Jerome Powell's retirement plan. Now, I don't think he needs the money. And I actually think
okay. I was thinking about that. Yeah, I'm worried.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. Save Jerome. I need to get a t-shirt that says that. Right. But to be fair to Powell, I think that he has been more plain spoken and more transparent than most other Fed heads, certainly more than Bernanke, certainly more than Yellen. But they're academics, and they just blindly trust their models. You know what it reminds me of? Did you ever watch The Office?
Yeah.
You know, with Steve Carell. Okay, you remember when he's in the rental car and he's following the GPS and he's steering himself right into a lake, and he goes, that's what the GPS is telling me. Right. That's what these people are. And you pull back and you go, whoa, whoa, whoa. Hey, guys, this isn't a monetary issue that you're dealing with, right? I think that there are political reasons. That's the other tough thing about where we're at. You know, why are they hiking so aggressively? Honestly, I think the biggest thing that they're trying to do is make sure Donald Trump doesn't get elected again.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I think that's the same thing. But let me just see if I can also boil this down in this way. The more you try to add to your model, the less likely it will be. Like if you are, so you're going to do a 12 month revenue model based on a startup. It's an utter startup. You're pre-revenue. That's going to be wrong. Now, how wrong is it going to be? Well, that goes to in a venture capital sense. What they're really doing is they're dummy checking you. Like, what are your assumptions? How could your assumptions change? What are your competitors doing? If you claim you don't have competitors, what are the nearest adjacencies? Then you're making an argument for valuation. What they're really doing is dummy checking you. Have you done any research on the advertising industry, for instance, or on the podcasting industry? Have you done any research on firms that buy data and sell data? They're dummy checking you. Now, if you're post-revenue and you've got revenue coming in, now you do a three-year model. Well, that's going to be somewhat likely. Now, you do 20, you have no idea. And in technology, you do 5, you have no idea. But when you're, you know, Jerome Powell, and you're modeling the world and you're modeling human behavior and you don't include human behavior, emotions, or skullduggery because there's not room in spreadsheets for this, what you're really saying is they want to take a world created by the most mighty force that has ever or will ever exist, God Almighty. They want to put it in an Excel spreadsheet. And weirdly, it doesn't work. But that statement, so our model was not wrong, would be exactly like me saying, if I built a house and they came and said, there's no bathrooms in the house. Well, of course not. They weren't in the blueprints. What's your problem? There are no bathrooms in the blueprint. But you said you built us a house. I did. There's no, but there's not. So with this, then let me ask a question. And I'll get to the second Powell clip because it gets more to a personal level. Is that how, in your mind, someone can convince the figurehead Biden to ship five million barrels of oil out of this country as our fuel prices are going sky high? That is he cowed by academics? Or I know this is the constant phrase or constant churn of our conversations, because I don't think Biden's capable of evil. I think he's a mean man. I think he has a very cold heart. I think he's a lifelong grifter, but I don't know that he could be evil because it requires scheming. But is that how that makes sense to them? Let's send five million gallons out of this country of our strategic oil reserves.
I think that it's part of the do something disease. Right. If you look at it, I think that Federal Reserve policy is a perfect way to sum up really the entire U.S. government's policy. Right. Everything is pretend and extend. And it's been that way for 40 years. Pretend and extend. We'll worry about it tomorrow. Tomorrow is now. And I think a perfect illustration of this, and I ticked a lot of our listeners off. I ticked off some people. I took a lot of flack for this. But another thing that we were talking about, and this is a perfect illustration of going back to practitioner versus academic. When this whole inflation thing started, we were sitting there, and we've been saying this for the last 4 years, and I've literally been cursed at by people for saying this, that we thought the dollar would lose its supremacy through it going up, not down, right? Today, the DXY hit 107 and change. Again, new 23-year high on the dollar. Okay? And here's the again, it's not me saying I'm so smart and I knew it. It's a lack of understanding the way the system is built. Meaning, why did we think the dollar was going to go up? Because when the economy finally started rolling over, you have over $100 trillion of dollar-denominated debt out there. Okay? And the reason you do is because nobody extends the same faith to everybody's currency that they do ours. So when these countries lend back and forth or do business with each other, they don't do it denominated in their own currency. They don't trust each other, right? So they'll lend each other money, but the loan is denominated in U.S. dollars. Well, if you own a bunch of dollar-denominated debt, that means you have to service that debt in dollars. So when the economy starts rolling over and you see recession on the sidelines or coming up, right, on the horizon, what do you do? You batten down the hatches and you gather up all the things you're going to need, mainly U.S. dollars, right? It's a systemic thing. And you learn those things through operating in financial markets. And why do you learn them? Because if you don't, you lose money. And if you lose money, you lose clients and you lose your business, right? There's something on the line. You're not an academic sitting back there making your cool little charts and, oh, we'll just alter our model. Well, that's nice for you to say. That glitch in your model just caused a massive recession and 20 million lost jobs. Thanks, right? I understand for you it's a tweaking of your model. But how about some humility and understanding, like you said earlier, you can't model human behavior. And I will just sit there and tell you guys that as long as we are dominated by this academic elite ruling class, it's going to be rolling disaster over rolling disaster, because these people see 6 inches in front of their face, and you can, and they will not listen to you. Right. I think back to early 2006, Ben Bernanke, the issues in subprime are contained. If you were in financial markets at that time and you knew what you were looking at, you knew it was complete nonsense, right?
Right.
All you had to do is look at the issuance of subprime debt and realize that, no, this is not a market, right? If the issue in subprime was contained, we would have seen spreads blowing out between subprime and prime. You didn't see that at that time. So we sat there and went, he's full of it, right? It's just this lack of practitioners. That's what made the last head of the Fed, Volcker, that's why he was good at it. He threw the models out the window and said, wait a second, here is the issue. We're going to attack this the way I know how to attack this because of my time in the saddle, because I understand the way financial markets work. And these people don't. I mean, they just don't. They trust their model, yeah. And they've never had their tail on the line. You know,
there's two metaphors I would apply to this from life. I saw this series of videos. I went down this rabbit hole one day of people who practice a form of martial arts alone. And it's beauty based, and it's, hey, we'll get you in the gym. We'll get you super good at the kicks, spinning drop kicks and, you know, spinning side kicks and all the sort of dramatic kicks. And man, you watch these guys on video, Zach, they're monsters. And then they said,
shadow boxing world champ.
Yeah. And I mean, and you look at them, they're in great shape. You know, they've got rock rib abs. They look fantastic. And then they put them into a situation with someone who has spent their life fighting. Mm-hmm. So be that, say, someone who is a self-defense hand-to-hand combat teacher for a special forces group. And he can't do a standing. He can't do a jump kick. And it's not, I don't think any of these 50 videos I watched lasted over 20 seconds.
I was going to say 10, 15 seconds.
Yeah. And you'll see the artists, gymnast type practitioners of this stuff put their hands up like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And the fighter's like, what, whoa, whoa.
We're out of the theoretical.
Right. Now there's someone who has experience with taking life. When they have to, or knowing how to, should they have to. And now you get it. Like, you've never had to fight for your life. Academics, they never have to live with the results of their consequences of their ideas. They live in this bubble. The other one is this, you relate to this. My godfather, I died if I miss my godfather. He is my best friend's father, brilliant radio man. One of the reasons that I got into radio was because of Gary. And he started Dick Clark Productions, and he was, he ran the Gavin Report and Radio and Records. And he's just, if anyone in radio, you know, if I were to say his last name, people who've been in radio a long time know Gary. And he always bemoaned the fact that he didn't get a college education or a degree. He went, but he dropped out. And I mean, he's done brilliant. Well, he's been retired for 30 years. He decided to go back to college at a community college, and he's in a media accounting class. And this young teacher, professor, is teaching, here's how revenue is reflected in radio. And Gary's looking at this going, what? What? Since when? And so Gary, in his mid-50s, raises his hand. Yes, professor, I worked in the industry for, you know, 25 years. That, I know that was the model 25 years ago. It's changed. That's not how it's done now. And he goes, I don't know your name, but this is how it's done in this class. Instead of saying, oh, well, that's interesting. Can you tell us about that? Right. In instead of saying, and so he's afraid of a man with more experience and clearly a fragile person. So let's get this to a personal level, though, Zach, as we continue, because Jerome Powell also, he took a look at your savings account, Zach, and mine, looked at our portfolios, everyone listening to us. He looked into it and he's made a determination. I think it will give a lot of our listeners a great deal of comfort when I reveal what Jerome Powell knows about all of us. A great deal of comfort. I'm talking with Zach Abraham, the Chief Investment Officer, Bulwark Capital Management. Look at this right here, an announcement for Bulwark. The guy that you're listening to now looks at all the investment portfolios. And he has a team of people who work for him, which should make you very, very happy because Zach hires smart. And I've heard him say he hires people smarter than he is in core areas. And that's a sign of someone who runs a good, responsible business. Listen, if you're hearing this and this is making you nervous, okay, talk of finance. Or if I come to you, if I look in the eye and say, are you ready to retire in 5 years? If that causes a pit in your stomach or cold sweats to break out, or you're going to drop and cry in the fetal position, get in touch with Zach. If it causes you to question, I don't know, get with Zach at Bulwark Capital Management. Now, if you hear that and you go, absolutely, 100%, I'll just invite you to test that and get in touch with Bulwark Capital Management. They are zealously focused on risk management. And what we're talking about today, this next soundbite, this should tell you it's a risky environment when people are willing to make proclamations like you're about to hear from Jerome Powell. So the easiest way to get in touch with Zach is you go to knowyourriskradio.com. That's where the radio show's at, the podcast. I would just cut that all out. For me, I'm a phone guy. It's 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK for Bulwark Capital Management. And if you're that confident person, well, don't be afraid to put it to the test. Let's see what these guys say at Bulwark Capital Management. Remember, investment advice cannot be given under client services agreement. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Trek Financial LLC and SEC registered investment advisor. Zach, here's the other piece from Jerome Powell. And I guess this comes from the little trip, not little, long, lengthy, painful, instructive, important trip my family and I made through adolescent and youth mental health. Because you'd never go to someone and say, you're fine. When someone says, I'm really hurting. No, don't be sad. Don't be angry. Right? Don't be upset. No, stop. Don't be upset. This is Jerome Powell explaining that anyone who's worried about their finances really shouldn't be.
So the U.S. economy is actually in pretty strong shape. So if you look back a year, the U.S. economy grew more than 5.5%. It was really the big reopening year. And so we had expected this year to be that growth would moderate to a more sustainable path. We also, of course, are raising interest rates. And the aim of that is to slow growth down so that supply will have a chance to catch up. We hope that growth can still remain positive. But if you look at it, the strength of the economy, households are in very strong financial shape. They've still got a lot of excess savings from forced saving from not being able to travel and things like that, and also from fiscal transfers. So households are overall, not every household, and not the ones at the lower end of the income spectrum, but overall in strong shape. The same thing is true of businesses. Very, very low rates of default and things like that. Lots of cash on the balance sheet. The labor market is tremendously strong, still averaging very, very high job growth per month. So overall, the U.S. economy is well positioned to withstand tighter monetary policy, we think.
Zach Abraham.
Okay, let's take it blow by blow. Household wealth. Okay, let the market drop another 20%. Let's check that data again, right? Again, it's like flying 6 inches away. I mean, it's the definition of flying blind or driving through the rearview mirror, right? Because household wealth, I mean, one of the biggest boosts to household wealth numbers is home equity and stock market, right? So what's happening to home equity right now? Now, I don't think we're on the precipice of some 2008, 2009 collapse. The dynamics of the market are completely different. But what I'm saying is the numbers he's talking about are incredibly transient, right? And those savings are getting eaten up. If everything he is saying, why is credit card debt jumping off the page? right? Why is credit card debt jumping off the page? Because people are trying to fill in the gap, right? Go talk to businesses. I mean, it's just, it's insane. They're sitting back there just talking from their ivory tower. Are we in the midst of some type of economic collapse? No, but you're going to do it if you continue on with this tight monetary policy. And I'm not saying, I'm not saying rates should be at zero. They shouldn't be. You need to normalize rates. But the other thing, Todd, you can point to is these are the kind of messes you get in when markets aren't allowed to do what markets do. As long as 10 people in $3,000 suits are setting interest rates, you're going to have these issues over and over and over and over and over again. Because they're making arbitrary or political based decisions with monetary policy and interest rates and all these other kind of things. You know, households are very, you know, you go down the list. Do I think that the structure of the economy is irrevocably broken? No. Do I think, again, I don't think we're in an 08-09 type scenario, but what you're doing is, I mean, think about it this way. If you run an economy at a consumer-driven economy at 0% interest rates, at rolling quantitative easing, so juicing asset prices, for 15 years, right? And you all of a sudden pull back on that. Well, what's going to happen, right? It's like drying out an old alcoholic. And you're like, why are they dying? Right? Why are they dying? We got them off alcohol. And you go, okay, well, yeah, in the practical world, right? We need to wean them off and we need to, you know, make sure we got IVs and we got to counteract all these things because it's going to take time. And they don't even grasp the concept. They don't think that they were serving the alcohol for 15 years. They don't think that they were serving the opium or the you know, painkiller for 15 years. And now all of a sudden they're like, well, they're going to be fine. We're going to get them off the drugs. It's going to be great. And you're like, well, that's not the way the human physiology works, right? That's not the way the human body works. You got to do this over time. You can't just pull the plug. And I mean, all you got to go do, I was at a 4th of July, and I know this, I didn't need to do it anecdotally, but I was at a 4th of July get together and I was talking to a real estate agent and just talked to him how it was. And they go, it just stopped dead. Right. Real estate just stopped dead. Right. It's not plummeting, but it just stopped dead. Like there are no more bidding wars. It's just stopped. And this is the problem with these arbitrary academic type decisions. It's again, we shouldn't have been there in the first place. But no, for that matter, I'll tell your listeners this. You know, I don't know what's going to happen here in the next couple months. Nobody does, but you guys need to be exorbitantly careful. Like I said, you've got the DX, the dollar index at levels we haven't seen I've got an article pulled up my computer right now. Street analysts are suggesting earnings rates for the S&P 500 to grow 4.1% year over year. Laughable. And you don't even need all these other things going wrong. All you need to show me is the dollar index. Right, the dollar has now rallied 35% against the yen, 50% against other currencies. Do you think the people in those countries are going to buy as many iPhones now that they're 35 to 50% more expensive on a same currency basis? Hey, these people are nuts, right? And why are they not altering their earnings reports? Again, bunch of academics working there, and then also investors need to realize you're never going to hear media types or analysts telling you to get out until the train's already off the rails. Right? Why? Because they got to keep the lights going, the flashing lights, right? Come on in. If the party's water's warm, hop on in here. What happened here, but people need to be exorbitantly careful here. The setup is really bad. And I think the quotes that you just played, you think that there is this omniscient body that has your back and that understands the unique problems that we're facing and is going to stick save this thing? I think all you need to do is listen to those quotes. The blind is leading the blind, and typically that means you don't end up in a very good place.
Yeah, and you know, all that's so well said. And I wanted to ask this question, first of all, about Powell, and then truly to you. He has determined people have excess savings. What does that mean?
He's looking at
Well, how does he determine that?
They look at there's a combination of different things they're looking at. They're looking at the average balance of savings accounts. And I think that is an extraordinarily, silly way to look at it, because they do not correct that number against higher, you know, they don't rebalance that number against. So they'll look at excess savings by looking at money in savings accounts, like, or money in money accounts across the system, right? How much cash is sitting, in savings vehicles, CDs, things of that nature across the complex. But then they don't rebalance that against current rates of inflation or current rates of living increases, right? So you could sit there and go, well, look at savings accounts are 20% higher. And you're like, well, have you looked at cost of living?
Well, right? But I guess my greater point is this strikes me very, very much. And it's been the theme of your approach to this today. You know, Fauci came out and said everybody needs to get injected. Everybody's at risk. Never true. But hey, why quibble with details? Why treat human beings as human beings? Why reflect the fact that God, you know, created unique fingerprints and a unique eyeball structure and sounds of our voices, even our keyboard strokes are unique? Why do that? You know, all these stupid, you know, walking hairy robots, you know, these hairy meat sack robots, they're all the same. Or to do it that way. So when we come back, I want to ask you, though, on a general basis for folks listening to this in this environment, you work with people near retirement, you know, that 5-year, 10-year window. Not that you say no, but that's a sweet spot given, you know, your focus on risk management. But I wanted to ask about the very fundamentals from Zach Abraham for people starting. And there's a reason for this, Zach. There's a next hour. I have a listener email I'm going to answer. I'll give you a heads up on this. Same thing I just talked about with the one size fits none CDC approach to, you know, so-called public health is the exact opposite of SOTA weight loss, stands for state of the art, exact opposite. So, for instance, someone asked me the other day because they heard us talking. I was talking with some people who have joined SOTA weight loss and they're having the same success, same level of success my wife is having. I've got another now relative who's joined SOTA weight loss. And they said, well, how much food will they give me? How many calories will I eat? I said, I have no idea. It entirely depends on how many calories you burn and how much they think you can drop in fat per week and keep it off. And that was confusing to one of the people saying, so wait, so there's, I can't go to the website and look at that? No. Like if you went to a website to look at how much, you know, how you should lose weight, lose fat, how do they know? They don't know what trigger foods you have. They don't know how you eat now. They don't know your body composition. Like don't ever come to me and talk about BMI. It's a complete utter scam, body mass index, silliness. They don't use that. How much fat do you have? How much muscle do you have? And the rest is bone and water. And they look at that. Why? Because that's the number. That's the linchpin number. And then from that, they calculate how much food you'll eat every day. And then from that, they'll talk about your trigger foods. And then from that, they'll talk about when you eat. And they'll lay this all out for you. And when that's all done, they'll present you a piece of paper saying, in these number of weeks, you should drop this much unwanted fat from your body for this much money. That's as simple as it gets, as transparent as it gets, and as uniquely calibrated to an individual as it gets, because to do anything else would put them in the corner of Jerome Powell. Look, Americans have a lot of excess muscle. Let's force them to eat Bill burgers. Hey, man, boobs aren't that bad. Bill looks great. It's SOTAweightloss.com, S-O-T-A. Weightloss.com, it stands for state of the art for all those reasons. SOTAweightloss.com. Zach, I got a note from a young man, he's thinking ahead. He's a professional pilot, he's got himself a great gig, but he does have to live far away from family. And I'm going to address this. We're going to do listener emails next hour. It's been a while. And there's some really good ones and one really angry one. I constantly get emails from people saying you've gone soft since you put the Lord at the center and you're not a battle or a warrior anymore. So we'll talk about that. But he is looking at a career change, you know, moving up on the ladder, but he has to get these injections. And he dropped into this. Hey, I'm 24, and I was surprised to see I could open an account at Bulwark. They treated me like a grown-up. I do have some money put aside, but not like they're big fish. And his question for me is more about should he take the injections and prayer for guidance. So I just wanted to jump off of this. This guy's, he's got a great career ahead of him. He may choose to take these injections and earn like five times more money than he does now. He may not. But what do you say to that 24-year-old who's got that career established, but is still in that tenuous position of putting money away? What are the sort of not excess savings? That's a Jerome Powell thing. But what are the three to five things you say down to dollar amounts in general for people like this?
Number one is debt. And I accumulated a fair amount of debt early on when my wife and I both did, because we had to pay our way through. We were stuck in the middle. So our parents were, I grew up wonderfully, somewhat of an idyllic childhood, but my family was not, we were right in the middle. So we made enough to where we didn't qualify for federal loans or anything like that. No grants. My wife's family was the same way. At the same time, we didn't make enough for our parents to finance, you know, 25 grand a year for college.
Yeah.
So her and I were both on our own, and it took me about 10 years to dig out of that debt. And I think at one point my wife and I had $220,000 of student debt, and we both worked through college. Like, this wasn't just us being irresponsible, putting our living costs on it. It was just the cost of, you know, just the cost of what it took. My biggest thing to them would be, live inside your means. It's not hard. It's free. It is easy. Stay out of debt. Debt is what gets you trapped. It eliminates options. It robs you of wealth. The whole system is corrupt. When you look at, I was going to get my house refied, and the only way I could qualify for the prime rate was if I put more money on one of my credit cards, because I just had a credit card there for emergencies, you know. And by putting more debt on it, my score would go up.
Yes.
What is that? That tells you all you need to know.
Gamification.
Right? Yes. And it is, they want you on the hamster wheel. So exercise a little bit of discipline and immune yourself from caring about what other people think. When I started Bulwark, it's a funny story. When I started Bulwark, I was just driving up and down to meet people, right? That was back before people would actually call to talk to me.
Yeah.
You know, I had to go see them. And this was seven years ago, 8 years ago. And I did it driving up and down I-5 in a four-door hatchback Ford Focus that was 2002 with 220,000 miles on it. And I pulled up to one of my clients' houses, $4 million spread on Lake Union or Lake Washington. And he comes out and he goes, man, I pictured more of a Bentley. And I said, have you ever seen me pull up in a Bentley, move your money, right? Because something's gone on. But my whole point is, do not buy into this idea that you got to look the part. Do not buy into caring about what other people think. If you are passionately pursuing your goals and your pursuits, that's what people will notice. And the right people will notice it. You don't want the attention that comes with that car. You don't want the attention that comes with the glitzy house, right? That's all nonsense anyway, right? And if you're young and you're 24 and you can learn that lesson just by hearing somebody like me talk about it, hats off to you. Because I was better than most. But I needed to learn that lesson a little bit the hard way too, to really get anesthetized from caring about what people think. So that would be number one. Number two, buy fear. Anytime you see panic in anything, right? I'm not telling you to go load up on it, but whether it's in energy stocks or commodities, whether it's in housing, whether it's anytime you see panic and you hear people on the street going, I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole. That should be the thing that turns your alarm bell off. It doesn't mean it's going to go up instantly, but step in there. You're young. You can swing the bat. Go in there and buy one of those, right? Go in there and buy a house in 2010, right? You know, like I did, I was fortunate enough to be able to have that opportunity. And so the only way that you can take advantage of these things are linked, right? The only way you can take advantage of things like that is if you haven't been spending everything you make. Right? And you're not trying to impress all the wrong people. I don't agree with Dave Ramsey on everything. I probably agree with him on like 95% of what he says. But I love his line about, don't spend money you don't have to impress people that don't like you. Right? And it's so true, but it's so simple. And most people don't do that. Here's another one. Can we help? Do I think that 24-year-old will get better results with us? Probably. Right. But one of the things I tell even my buddies is, look, no matter what I do for you, It is not going to overcome whether you're putting 6% of your income away or 12% of your income away, right? If you just, if you're putting away 6% and you're investing with us, you could just, if you're putting away 12% and just throwing it in the S&P, you're going to blow what we do away from you, right? Because, or you're going to blow away what we do for you because you're putting twice as much money away.
Yeah.
Right. And when things get nasty, put in more, right? I trying to convince people to think counterintuitively. When everybody else is excited, you know, Buffett calls it, be greedy when others are fearful, fearful when others are greedy. If that's all you did at age 24, you're not going to have to work past 45 or 50 if you don't want it, right? It stacks up. So I'll tell you an opportunity right now, and I want to be careful because we've talked about fuel and or we've talked about oil and commodities and all that kind of stuff. And if you're out there playing in those fields right now, they've been getting pounded. I mean, just pounded, indiscriminately pounded. It's pretty nuts. But it's a perfect example of what I think those young 24-year-olds should be investing in right now, because short term doesn't mean anything to them. But for everybody else, guys, one of the things that we've talked about, and it's no wonder that this is the part I don't think people pay enough attention to, is that if you're playing in these things, you've got to expect 40 to 50% volatility. That's what happens, right? And that's one of the things that we do is we'll play in those areas, but we also hedge out and mute out that volatility because our clients have much shorter time horizons. But save money, stay out of debt.
You said it to say you were going to say something. It sounded like you were going to give a general view on investment because you can't give investment advice without a client services agreement, as we know. But it sounded like you were going to give sort of a direction people might take in terms of a vehicle for investment.
Yeah. So right now, I think that you still want to be in those commodity type plays. I think that the inflation isn't over. It's going to appear like it's over. Here's how we think this is going to play out. Everything's going to start coming apart. You look at dollar index, look at rates, you look at all these different things. Unless one of these things changes drastically in the near future, there are going to be some serious problems. And so first of all, if you don't know how to protect capital, you should probably just sit in cash right now. People are like, oh, Zach, the inflation. Yeah, I know. But, it's like I got griped at by a client. He goes, we have too much money sitting in cash. And I go, well, yeah, but we're outperforming the market by 15%. And he's like, well, yeah, but what about the inflation? And they go, we're outperforming the market by 15%, right? Sometimes regardless of inflation or what you see, sitting in cash can be a good opportunity. And maybe you miss out on the bottom, right? Maybe you don't catch it perfectly. Maybe whatever. I just think now is a time where I think people are so, and it makes sense. 15 years, again, the Federal Reserve stick saving every single economic issue with printed money. And people are really anesthetized to the risks out there. And, I think the only way you should be playing in these markets right now is if you really understand how to manage risk and you know what you're doing. And here's a really quick litmus test for people out there. If you don't know what your net exposure is, if you don't know what net exposure in a portfolio is, don't be actively managing these markets. Okay. That's a good litmus test. That's the good start. But right now, you need to batten down the hatches because I don't see a lot of room for upside surprises unless the Fed reverses course. And there's just a lot of bad stuff happening. And if they continue to raise rates like he's talking about, they're going to blow this thing up.
And I would say for my layman's thing is start 24-year-old by remembering that you own nothing and that you steward everything and that's God's money. And that when if you tithe, you're not giving anything to God. Like you can tithe.
No.
You can do 20%. You can do 30%. You're not giving him anything. You're saying to him, I trust you with what you gave me. And I am showing that trust.
I love the fact that you bring this up because one of the things that my wife and I have gotten to, God, praise God, he's made our business way more successful than I thought it would have been. I didn't see myself here. But one of the things that my wife and I talk about is the only spending I don't feel some type of conflict about is the money that we give to God, right? It's the only spending that I'm 100% confident in. The rest of the time I'm going, okay, is this ego? Is this trying to impress people? Is this about me just wanting more? I grit my teeth when I say it, cause that's that just, I need more.
Yeah.
You know, I was on a cruise with a bunch of other people in the industry, and I was listening to these guys talk, and they were all really successful. And I went back to my cabin and talked to my wife at one point, and I just said, this is gross. These men get a little bit of success. They get some money, and they just think they can devour whatever they want, whether it's people, whether it's goods, you know, so getting used to that, building that, there is nothing more fun than contributing to good God, you know, putting money in the places that God wants you to, and watching it bless people, and watching it blossom, and watching it grow. It is so much more fulfilling than a new car or anything else. You know, my wife calls it eternal investing, and I couldn't agree with her more. I just get used to that, build that muscle up. That's where satisfaction and fulfillment is going to come from, not in the new car.
Yeah. And it also, it's also a great act in humility. And it took me to my mid 50s to be very, very comfortable saying, I own nothing. I have built nothing, because apart from God Almighty, even the Lord Jesus. And if this is a hard pill, because it is, I think I don't really talk in men and women terms, because I think that's a stupid game. But for a certain type of type A person, it's a really hard thing to say, no, I didn't build that. But remember, the Lord Jesus said, apart from the Father, I can do nothing. I mean, the Lord is saying, apart from the Father, I can do nothing. If he can be humble, and I can't raise the dead, and you can't raise the dead, and I didn't create the universe, and you didn't, and the Lord did, then we can all learn from that. Zach, it's always great to have you on. We'll work on getting that one-on-one debate with you and Secretary Powell. I'm just trying to come up with that $750,000 per minute speaking fee he charges. So,
oh yeah. And like I said too, remember, he's going to take me on really aggressively, because he's got to build up that pension plan, right?
Oh yeah.
He wants to get his $4 million consultancy fee from BlackRock.
Yeah.
You know.
All right. This is the Todd Herman Show. Please go be well, be strong, be kind, and be humble enough to remember you're not giving God anything when you tithe. You're simply showing him you appreciate what he gave you.